Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code HOWIE10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. We've already been having a lot of fun today. Throughout this administration, I've seen a lot, but to find out that Mayor Pete, who is supposed to be an expert in transportation, who can forget the time he told us how romantic airports are? I felt like we were in such good hands. Well, turns out he's been on paid leave for a few months. And curious enough, the mainstream media, our journalists, who usually have such intellectual curiosity, did not realize it until today. They realized when Donald Trump, you know, changed his hairstyle even slightly or the way he drank water. But they didn't realize Mayor Pete was nowhere to be found until today. It's pretty amazing. But there's plenty of other stories brewing. And one that I saw today that a lot of people were making kind of a similar point, and they were pointing out an ironic aspect to this story, was that the U.S. has decided to lift the travel ban on November 8th. So that's coming up in a few weeks, allowing vaccinated international visitors into the country. And the point that I saw a lot of different people, including conservatives on Twitter and even on television today, the point they were making is we don't have this rule at the southern border. You know, you never had to be vaccinated to cross through the southern border. And so I immediately thought, let's have on Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies. Jessica, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Good to talk with you, Grace.
Now, I'm sure this hypocrisy is running through your mind at all times, Jessica, but have you had some people reach out to you today and say, why are people acting like this is a big deal? I mean, the southern border has been wide open and there's no vaccine requirement that I know of on the southern border.
Oh, absolutely not. I was down in El Paso 2 weeks ago and the front page of the local paper there announced that about 1,200 of the Haitians who had crossed illegally in Del Rio had arrived in El Paso for processing, and 60 of them had already tested positive for COVID and were going to be distributed around area hotels. I mean, that's great news to read at your hotel breakfast table. But yeah, there absolutely are no, they're not even always able to test the illegal migrants, of course, because so many of them are evading the Border Patrol altogether. But yeah, there are about 3,000 people every day who are being released into the United States who have not had to show that they are vaccinated. And meanwhile, not only foreign travelers are going to have to show an acceptable, quote unquote, proof of vaccine, but it has to be a certain type of vaccine, and they still have to get the test within 72 hours of arriving. Even American citizens still have to do that. But we're fine with unknown people coming across, you know, willy-nilly all over our thousands of miles of U.S. border to the south and pretty much welcomed into communities around the country.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up El Paso.
Hypocrisy is stunning.
I'm glad you brought up El Paso, Jessica, because there's a column in unheard.com, and the author writes, it doesn't help that there are far fewer border agents on patrol to mine such gaps, since a large share are kept busy processing the illegal immigrants crossing. My question for you, Jessica, because you just said that you were there, after what we're seeing here, not just the chaos on the southern border, but also the way these Border Patrol agents were treated by the Biden administration when a fake story started circulating about them whipping Haitian immigrants, do you think that the Border Patrol is going to have a hard time filling these jobs? I mean, it's hard to get people to work, period, let alone in a job that seems pretty thankless.
Yes, morale is terrible right now, according to my sources in the Border Patrol, and they need more people They need good people. It's already one of the most difficult law enforcement jobs to qualify for because you have to be in great shape, expert marksmanship. You have to learn how to speak Spanish. You have to be willing to serve in some harsh conditions. And now, you know, in a job that is incredibly politicized and you're not getting any support at all from the political leadership of the agency or even from the White House itself. It's really shameful. And we shouldn't be surprised to see, I don't know what the recruitment numbers are right now, but they can't be good. The same is true of law enforcement agencies around the country. When this narrative is out there that they are not valued, even though they're putting their life on the line to keep us safe. But, and, you know, it, particularly the Border Patrol is exposed to danger, to people throwing rocks at you, and now to COVID, without getting any support whatsoever, even though it is an incredibly important job.
Absolutely. Well said. Jessica Vaughn is the Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies. And Jessica, I want to talk to you about this Remain in Mexico policy. We've been hearing so much about it. It's Trump's policy, and it has become, like everything else, very politicized thanks to Donald Trump. Thanks to Donald Trump's effect on the left, I should say. But this has been a legal battle for a while, and it's back in the news today that the Biden administration is planning to restart the policy mid-November. Can you kind of explain to my listeners how this legal battle ensued and where you see it leading?
Well, one of the first acts of the Biden administration was to suspend this policy that was colloquially known as Remain in Mexico, which had been very effective at disincentivizing illegal border crossing, because the way it worked was if you crossed the border illegally, you were told and said, oh, I want to apply for asylum. You were told, okay, fine, but you're going to wait in Mexico to go through your proceedings, which is perfectly legitimate under the law. The Biden administration suspended it. And by the way, it had been endorsed by the federal courts under Trump. That's why they were able to keep doing it. Biden suspends it. The state of Texas and a couple other states sued and said, wait a minute, this is having an adverse effect on our state's security, and we're having to assume enormous risks to public safety with all these people crossing, after the crossings quickly got out of hand. And so a judge in Texas told the Biden administration that they had to allow the Border Patrol to have this option for processing people. Not that they had to always do it, but they had to have the policy option under the law. And the Biden administration is appealing, and then an injunction came down that said, no, you really have to do this in good faith. They're dragging their feet about reinstating it, and today they've announced that they are going to reinstate the Remain in Mexico policy, but with some quote-unquote improvements. And it actually sounds like it's going to be more like the ACLU version of Remain in Mexico than the effective policy that the Trump administration put into place. For example, they're only going to do it if Mexico agrees. And if Mexico says okay and they'll play along, and who knows, whether they'll really give them any incentive to do that, then they're going to be more lenient about who gets sent back to Mexico. They won't send back any quote-unquote vulnerable people, and they will make sure that they all have lawyers, and they're also going to make sure that they are not, coming, that nothing's going to happen to them, and they're also going to process their cases much more quickly than would otherwise be the case, which tells me that's going to be just a faster rubber stamp yes on their asylum claim. So I fear that this is not going to be an improvement.
Yeah, and the part of this, Jessica, I'm speaking with Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies. The part of this that really drives me crazy, and that I wish the Biden administration would learn, or maybe they have, and they just don't want to admit it, is that this attempt at appearing, and I don't want to say that they really want to be like this. I think it's all about optics. This attempt to appear more compassionate than Trump and his administration, or to appear more lenient. This leniency actually leads to a lot of dangerous situations for a lot of times children. I mean, I saw in the New York Post yesterday that a smuggler carried a girl over a 30-foot U.S. border wall and then dropped her off and then returned to Mexico. So this idea that, you know, oh, we're being more welcoming, you're actually putting people in a lot more danger than if you were just honest and kind of had some restrictions here and some guidelines.
I agree. I think that the policy that the Biden administration has, which is to, you know, welcome and catch and release and incentivize coming illegally, is actually the morally wrong policy. I mean, just the other day, the Border Patrol had to fish someone out of the river who was drowning. There was a family of migrants that I read just yesterday who were stowaways on a train in Texas, and they somehow fell off and got run over by the train and literally lost multiple limbs, all because they're incentivized to come here. You know, speaking of the Border Patrol, who are heroes, they're every day saving lives all the time of people who put themselves in the hands of criminal smugglers who care nothing about human life. They're in it for the money. And our policies are encouraging people to do these foolish and dangerous and reckless things because they've been led to believe correctly by the Biden administration that they will be allowed to stay here indefinitely if they manage to get to U.S. soil. And that is wrong for the migrants. It's wrong for Americans. It's not helping the countries that they're coming from. And it's putting our law enforcement agencies in very, very difficult situations. But, you know, they don't care because they, you know, this strokes their ego and makes them feel that they're great humanitarians.
Ugh, and it could not be further from the truth. Jessica Vaughn from the Center for Immigration Studies, thank you so much for joining us. Jessica is the Director of Policy Studies at CIS, and you can check out her work at CIS.org, or you can follow her on Twitter. She's always retweeting a lot of these stories that you're not going to get if you're following, you know, Jim Acosta or Joy Reid. So make sure you follow her on Twitter at @JessicaV_CIS. The Aviva Trattoria Tour of Italy is back. Two new dates have just been added. One in Maynard on Tuesday, November 9th, and one in Malden on Tuesday, November 16th. I went to one in Malden with my sister. We had the best time. You know, you try all these different wines, you get all these different dishes. Chef Anthony comes out, he explains them all, you know, why he chose them, what they mean to him, what regions of Italy they're from. And then you get to eat the delicious food and drink the delicious wine. I mean, that kind of sells itself. But on top of that, at the very end, they come out with a huge pig, which is very cool. You don't see that every day. And you get a delicious piece of tiramisu to end the night. And there's usually a musician. It's really fun. It's a really festive night. And I know these are going to sell out. So every time I say it, I'm just like warning people, buy them now, because I don't want to hear about how you want it to go. I want you to be able to go. So all you have to do is go to avivatrattoria.com and grab your tickets. Again, the locations: Maynard on Tuesday, November 9th, and Malden on Tuesday, November 16th. That is going to creep up before you know it. I mean, we're already in mid-October, so you want to get these now. You'll have something to look forward to. It's a great thing to do after so many months of being locked away in quarantine. This is a really fun, festive night out, and you're going to enjoy it. Free parking at both locations. Grab your tickets today at avivatrattoria.com. That's avivatrattoria.com. We'll be right back with more. 844-500-4242. We're talking about transitory inflation. And also, Ron Klain's been getting in trouble on Twitter, and his latest tweet that he put out, oh my gosh, it's going to make you want to pull your hair out. We'll be right back. It's the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. Grace Curley, she's working for you.
I'm like Bette Midler and for the boys. I've got to keep the troops entertained.
Well, Welcome back, everyone. I got to read this tweet from Ron Klain. This guy is driving me wild. I must feel like he's trolling me at this point. He has this habit of retweeting puff pieces. And luckily for Joe Biden, despite the fact that his presidency is in shambles, he still has an army of loyal soldiers in the mainstream media that are writing. I don't even understand now how they're getting themselves to write this. Like the Jennifer Rubins of the world, they must really, really have to shut off the reality part of their brain and just, you know, put the blinders on and just write. Joe Biden's doing such a great job, actually. And it's all like, actually, if you think about it like this, they're just bending their logic like pretzels in their mind to try to figure out how to make this septuagenarian seem as if he's doing a decent job when he's clearly not on any front. But the New York Times always comes through. The old gray lady, she ain't what she used to be. And the New York Times had a piece out, Biden battling supply chain woes to announce port will operate 24/7. You know, this was like, oh, look at all the stuff he's getting done. Check that off your to-do list. And Ronald Klain retweets this article, and this is his caption. Like many other problems we have inherited, we are tackling the supply chain mess. I'm sorry, what?
Everybody's always blaming me for everything.
Huh? The supply chain mess you inherited? I don't remember this happening under Donald Trump. And here's how I know I would have remembered. Want to know how I know? Because when Donald Trump burped, CNN ran a special on it. When Donald Trump put ketchup on his steak, it was 24/7 coverage. When Donald Trump had two scoops of ice cream and everybody else only got one, I heard about it. I heard about what the guy had for breakfast.
He gets two scoops of vanilla ice cream.
He gets two scoops of vanilla ice cream while everyone else gets one. Yeah, it was about that with everything. So I kind of have this feeling that if Donald Trump was president while we had a supply chain crisis, while there were cargo ships on both coasts, I feel as though I may have heard about it over and over and over and over again. Because he tweeted Covfefe by mistake. And I still remember that because they drilled it into my skull. So for some reason, I feel like Ron Klain might be trying to pull one over on us. You can blame Trump for everything, for the weather, for the coronavirus, for the economy. You can blame him for everything. But even so, this is a bit of a stretch. Ronald. I mean, these people have no shame, really. Imagine typing that out with a straight face. The day after you call inflation and supply chain crises high class problems. He would know. Wouldn't they know high class problems? These beautiful people in the Beltway. I saw today people were tweeting out some of these high class problems, like the fact that there's no donuts at Dunkin' Donuts and they have the sign up, sorry, no donuts. You know, because there's nothing now. This is like a third world country. So they put up the sign, sorry, no donuts today. And someone retweeted it and said, high-class problems. Don't you hate those high-class problems? All those fancy people, all those Daddy Warbuckses eating their old fashions at Dunkies. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Follinsbee Inn, located on beautiful Kezar Lake in North Sutton, New Hampshire. That's Follinsbee Inn, spelled Follansbee. Go to follinsbeein.com. Jared, what is the poll question? And what are the results thus far?
Which almost president turned out to be a bigger flop? Pete Buttigieg or Kamala Harris?
I'm going to change it, actually, because for today, I like to do the most recent. I'm going to say Mayor Pete.
Mayor Pete up to 21%. 79% still believe our MIA VP, Kamala Harris, is a bigger flop.
That's the border czar to you, sir. Please call her by her full title. The border czar, Dr. Kamala Harris, Madame Vice President. Build back better.
Border czaress.
Hey, I don't make the rules. All right, when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about inflation. We're going to play some amazing sound. And I have an Andrew McCabe update for you. 844-500-4242. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Is Avril Lavigne busy? Because she might do a decent job as Secretary of Transportation. Can't be any worse than Pete, right? Maybe she'll actually come into work.
They've both been missing from the public eye for about the same amount of time.
They really have. She needs a good comeback story. This could be it. Yeah, so there's a really good piece here by Pat Buchanan. I'm going to read a little bit of it. Are the good times over for Joe? When sorrow comes, said King Claudius, they come not single spies, but in battalions, as the king found out. So it seems with President Joe Biden, who must be asking himself the question Merle Haggard asked, are the good times really over for good? Consider the critical issues with voters today. The state of the economy. Inflation in September stood at 5.4% year on year. The supply chains for goods entering the country before Thanksgiving and Christmas are clogged. Container ships are backed up in the ports. Many of the trucks to carry the goods to inland markets sit idle for lack of drivers. The latest employment figures show 10.4 million U.S. jobs going begging in August as 4.3 million workers dropped out of the labor force. And this is the part of it I really liked because one of the callers brought this up as well. How are Democrats responding to the return to inflation? Well, I would want to add in here, and I'm not trying to play editor for Pat Buchanan, the great Pat Buchanan, but I would add in how they're responding is first to deny that it exists, then to label it as overheating, then to call it transitory. And then, to get back to Pat Buchanan's point, by trying to pile a $3.5 trillion social spending package on top of a $1.2 trillion infrastructure package, on top of the $1.9 trillion COVID Relief Act package that Biden signed in March. Coupled with an easy money Fed policy, this hand could play out for Biden the way it played out for former President Jimmy Carter. Now, I want to talk about inflation because I want to kind of go through. Yesterday, we did a little bit of a timeline for what do we do a timeline on? Was it the supply chain crisis and how these issues evolve? And today, I would like to talk a little bit about inflation and specifically Joe Biden's reaction to it, because Jen Psaki covered her bases a little bit by saying, you know, overheating, it's transitory. Joe Biden was very much in denial. And he was telling us that none of this was going to affect us and that we were going to be good as gold, basically. So we're going to discuss this a little bit. And David Harsanyi has a great piece in Town Hall that breaks down how this administration is, when you really look at it, they're insulting the American people by acting like this isn't happening. You know, I hate to use this word. I know it's so overused, especially in 2021, but they are gaslighting us. They're gaslighting us and telling us, and I don't know if people know this, maybe they do, and I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but I learned this when I was writing a piece about gaslighting. It's from a movie, like an old Hollywood movie, where the husband convinces the wife she's going crazy by flicking the lights on and off really fast. And she starts saying like, oh, the lights are going. And he says, no, they're not. You're losing your mind. And that's what gaslighting is. It's telling someone that what they're seeing isn't happening. And that's exactly what this administration does, not just with inflation, with everything. But the problem with inflation is that people do notice it more because you have to go to the grocery store. You know, another high class problem. You have to fill up your car with gas. And by the way, CNN is even covering this. And I cracked up today. I saw a screenshot that Chris DeGaul posted from CNN. Oh, I hope I can find it here in my stack. And it said, they're really worried. Oh, here it is right here. They're really worried about these bad numbers and inflation. And this was their Chiron, okay? This is their Chiron. Gas prices are up. And they have, you know, they have their reporter guy pointing at the big, those big fancy touch screens where they show you all the graphics, the infographics. And it says gas prices are up, which is bad news for Democrats. And I thought, it's also kind of bad news for anybody who buys gas, you know, who uses gas in their cars, right? It doesn't seem to me like it would be such a partisan issue here. This seems like something that would affect, bad news for everybody. I understand that CNN is worried because they are a branch of the DNC and they want Democrats to win in the elections, and they'll do anything within their power to help them achieve that. But to put it in writing like that, gas prices are up, which is bad news for Democrats. What about the rest of us?
That really puts into perspective their mindset, though, and their worldview is that everything outside of them, outside of their world, they can't care. They can't be bothered to comprehend that.
No, the only time they care, whether it's about gas prices, whether it's about crime, crime is an issue where the only time the Democrats even pretend to care about law and order is when they see it affecting the polls. And that was something very interesting. The defund the police movement did not poll well for Democrats. That got them very nervous. It didn't get them nervous that people got shot. It didn't get them nervous that people's buildings got broken into and buildings were set on fire and stores were looted. That didn't bother them. What bothered them was the idea that this could be bad news for Democrats. Sacrebleu! God forbid! I'm clutching my pearls. Not bad news for the Democrats. Can't have that. By the way, here's an interesting little infographic, because CNN is not the only place that has infographics. Grace Curley has them as well. Gas prices up 45.1%. Airfare up 24.6%. Hotels up 16.9%. I know that the head of the National Economic Council told you guys that this was only like beef and poultry. We've added a couple of categories in the last few weeks, okay? But beef, poultry, and everything else.
But if you take out everything bad, the numbers look great.
Yes, yeah, that's very true.
I mean, really, if you just narrow it down to everything that's awful and you just remove that, things are great.
But I'm not even done yet. And I think this is an old infographic because it says bacon 8.4%, but I know bacon's
it's
up
19
more.
Or
it's
something
19.
Like that,
so this
yeah.
must have been, what, 2 days ago?
Right. Yeah, that's from last week, Grace. Jeez.
This is old news. Fake I am news. Ripping this up. It is really amazing. But let's talk a little bit about this, because David Harsanyi breaks this down. He starts with the Ron Klain of it all. Ron Klain had the audacity to tweet that, or to retweet a post from Jason Furman, who I guess is a Harvard guy. And he says, most of the economic problems we're facing, inflation, supply chains, etc., are high-class problems. We wouldn't have had them if the unemployment rate was still 10%. We would instead have had a much worse problem. And Ronald Klain does like the emojis of the fingers and goes, this. Now, I just have to say, their logic for stuff, you know what it really reminds me of? It reminds me of when I was younger and my mom would get mad at me for something. And it was whatever she was mad at, it was legitimate. And my response would always be, it could be worse. I could be robbing banks and smoking cigarettes. And my mom's like, okay, I guess, but that doesn't make what you did any better. That's their thing. It's, yeah, okay, there's inflation, guys, but this could be worse. The whole world could explode from a meteor. So when you look at it like that, and you kind of put that in perspective, things are looking pretty awesome. That is actually the White House's logic in a nutshell. I could be smoking cigarettes, Mom. Why don't you just be so grateful? I'm such a good child. I could have set the house on fire. And now that I look back, my mom had a lot of patience, because I would have been like, that is the stupidest argument I've ever heard. But that's what they're doing. Every single time something bad happens, they're like, they either blame it on Trump and say they inherited it, or they say, well, if you look at it like this, it's actually pretty good. And it's like, yeah, but no one's looking at it like that. Okay, none of us are aliens who are standing on our heads. We're all looking at it the normal way that humans look at things. All right, so let's go to Jen Psaki defending this buffoonery from Ronald Klain. Jared, this is cut 15, please.
I'm just curious. So just for context, what Ron Klain retweeted was a tweet from the former chairman of Economic Advisors, Jason Furman, where he said, for full context, which I think is important, most of the economic problems we're facing, inflation, supply chains, are high-class problems. What he went on to say is, we wouldn't have had them if unemployment rate was still 10%. We would instead have had a much worse problem. So I think the point here is, while there are some critics who are saying, what some of these critics are saying is, we don't know if they're saying that what they thought was great was when the unemployment rate was double what it is today.
Shut up. Okay, I'm sorry. But the context thing is wearing thin.
My philosophy is basically this, and this is something that I live by, and I always have, and I always will. Don't ever, for any reason, do anything to anyone for any reason.
This is what we're dealing with. And the whole for context thing is such baloney. That's her way of saying, like, you're not giving people the full picture. Yes, we are. Okay, yes, we are. It's a tweet. And he purposely retweeted it. Enough with the context, okay? God.
And I don't want to be this guy, but maybe the unemployment might still be at 10% if you didn't demand that 70% of the workforce get fired for not getting vaccinated.
That's one way to look at it. But if you look at it like this, okay, now that was the first part of David Harsanyi's point. Now, I'm in no position to comment on whether the inflation spike we're experiencing is transitory or not. Maybe it will be a short-term problem. Whatever the case, a president who feels comfortable with taking credit for creating millions of jobs after state-compelled shutdowns is likely going to be blamed. You can't have it both ways. And while it's not unreasonable for an economist such as Jason Furman to point that out, in the big picture, most of America's tribulations are high class. It's quite a different story for the administration to dismiss those concerns. Because in our reality, the one where the president promised to fix everything, the inflation debate is more important for a number of reasons. When asked whether he believed that passing another colossal spending bill would make the problem worse, the same president who contends that his $5.5 trillion welfare state expansion bill costs $0 argues that more spending would reduce inflation. Cut to.
If we pass the other two things I'm trying to get done, we will, in fact, reduce inflation.
Biden has waved away any inflation concerns on numerous occasions, once arguing that no serious economist was suggesting that unchecked inflation was on the way. Cut one, please.
There's nobody suggesting there's unchecked inflation on the way. No serious economist.
I'm not sure if Biden considers Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary for Bill Clinton and Barack Obama's National Economic Council director, a serious economist, but Summer seems to believe runaway inflation and bottleneck supply chain problems pose a serious risk to the economy. As a political matter, inflation isn't some abstract philosophical debate, but something tangible and historically fraught. I can remember the specter of inflation hanging over the adult world even as a kid. Now, I also want to play more Biden poo-pooing inflation concerns. Cut three, please.
Our experts believe, and the data shows, that most of the price increases we've seen were expected and expected to be temporary.
Cut four, please.
The vast majority of the experts, including Wall Street, are suggesting that it's highly unlikely that it's going to be long-term inflation that's going to get out of hand. There will be near-term inflation because everything is now trying to be picked back up.
And cut five, please.
And by the way, talk of inflation, the overwhelming consensus is going to pop up a little bit and then go back down. No one's talking about this great, great deal.
Gas is up 42%. I just want to add that in. These flashbacks are really, really amazing. You're not going to see them anywhere, except for the Grace Curley show, which is why you guys tune in. But they are damning. For retirees, inflation means instant wealth destruction. For everyone else, it means immediate hikes in the cost of living. Consumer prices, led by energy and food prices, have increased 5.4% overall since last year, which is the largest increase since 1991. The producer price index is up 8.6% over the past year. It's in its sixth month of record highs. Social Security benefits will rise nearly 6% for retirees in 2022 because of a cost of living adjustment, the biggest surge in decades. So apparently the government believes the transitory period will extend at least into next year. Even as Klain was retweeting Furman, Politico reported that the White House had been consulting the oil industry to seek a remedy for rising gasoline prices. This is all quite confusing, as even now, Democrats are campaigning to pass policies designed to increase the cost of energy by limiting the availability of fossil fuels. Perhaps Biden, unmoored from economic reality, will tell us that higher energy costs are actually good for the economy. But it's hard to think of anything more unpopular with the electorate than paying a lot for gas or food, high class problem or not. It's a great piece by David Harsanyi. And this high-class problem is hitting close to home for a lot of people. We'll see how Biden handles it. I'm prediction, he's not going to handle it well. 844-500-4242. A lot more to get to. We will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
And are the good times really over for good?
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Who's better than Grace Curley?
Nobody. Nobody. Nobody.
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Obviously, it's an incredibly complicated situation. We're talking about global supply chains, and it's mostly private sector systems, but we have a big role to play.
You had a big role to play in causing the problem. I don't know how big of a role you guys are going to have to play in fixing it. That's a trend I notice with the government. You know, when you think of the lockdowns and the shutdowns that happened during quarantine, I remember my dad said it to me and he said, you wait and see. All these people, Baker, Walsh, all these Massachusetts hacks, he said, they're very good at shutting things down. Let's see how creative they are with getting things open. And he was dead on right. And it's absolutely true.
Yeah, Big Rig Joe may need to jump back behind his 18-wheeler again and get things moving.
Toot, toot! We need the locomotive expert. That's who we need. Send out the hunter signal. We need him now.
He's riding the rails, ironically.
Oh, very good, Jared. Very good. By the way, there's a Keith Olbermann update. He's back at his penthouse outside on his beautiful patio. And you know who he's mad at now? Remember the last one he made where he said, if you haven't gotten the vaccine, you are afraid. You are afraid. And there was like spit coming out. He was foaming at the mouth. And I thought Michael Scott cured rabies, but he was foaming at the mouth. Well, now he's mad at Joe Rogan for going after Sanjay Gupta. Keith Olbermann just can't catch a break. By the way, I told you guys I had an Andrew McCabe update. Former FBI Deputy Chief McCabe gets his pension back in lawsuit settlement. I know what you're thinking. Grace, you mentioned this at the end of the hour. Well, we're going to bring Howie Carr on a little early today to talk about this and an insane letter that went out to some people who don't want to get vaccinated in Massachusetts. So at 2:30, Howie joins us. We've got Crazy Karen coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's The Grace Curley Show.